Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we open our show with national news headlines from Public News Service, including protests in Washington, D.C. as the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court moves forward to the Senate for a floor vote, an update on the Farm Bill, and a federal court decision to block deportation of immigrants from several countries granted protected status. We'll also have findings of a fact check on Congressman Duncan Hunter's ad smearing his opponent in what critics call a racist attack, and which the Washington Post ranked 4 Pinocchios. Councilman Ben Colasio in El Cajon has reportedly threatened a process server with an attack dog, an allegation that he denies. We'll have a report for you today on arguments for and against Prop 1, a statewide ballot measure aimed at helping those in need of affordable housing, including both renters and homebuyers. Hear why the Cajon Valley School District is drawing criticism after bullying of a Muslim student who is a refugee from Syria. Next, find out why sheriff's deputies are wearing pink patches this week, and hear how you can dine out for the cure to help raise funds for breast cancer research at local restaurants this week. We'll also have details on the voter registration deadline for the November election and who should be checking to make sure their registration is current to vote. In El Cajon, police have arrested a woman accused of hitting and seriously injuring a 9-year-old boy on a bicycle and then fleeing the scene of the crash, and our own photographer was a witness who stopped to aid the boy. County health officials have issued an outbreak declaration for meningitis at San Diego State University, and we'll have details today. Then hear about new options for dropping off unused drugs at pharmacies and learn how you can volunteer to be part of our East County Magazine radio show team. On Destination East County, hear about some haunting Halloween happenings and other special events coming up across our inland region. Now, after that near miss with a hurricane headed towards San Diego last week, we thought it would be a good time to replay our Sounds of History episode on a hurricane that struck East County back in 1976, and you may be surprised at the havoc that it wrought. Next, we'll take you to the old stone store in Campo, site of a historic gunfight. On Bookshelf, this Halloween season, we'll be re-airing our interview today with award-winning horror novelist Mark Clement. And finally, on Jobs Talk, learn about a career expo coming up Wednesday at Grossmont College. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, October 5th, 2018. I'm Mary Sherman. Protests ramp up as a vote on Kavanaugh's confirmation looms, a judge blocks Trump's efforts to end temporary protected status, and the vice president accuses China of trying to undermine the U.S. political process. Those stories and more coming up. Kavanaugh has got to go! Hey, hey! Back home! An angry protest outside the Hart Senate office building Thursday as demonstrators spoke out against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh, who faces allegations of sexual misconduct. Amid heightened security, hundreds were arrested, including some victims of sexual assault. An initial Senate vote on the nomination slated for today, with a final vote as early as this weekend. A supplemental FBI probe into the claims against the judge deepened the partisan divide over the nomination. Republicans argued it cleared Kavanaugh, while Democrats said the FBI failed to perform a thorough investigation. About 300,000 immigrants from El Salvador, Nicaragua, Haiti, and Sudan can breathe a sigh of relief, at least for now. As Suzanne Potter reports, a federal court judge has blocked the Trump administration from ending their temporary protected status.
TPS holders will now be allowed to stay in the U.S. at least until the case plays out in court. Many have lived here legally for decades and got TPS status when disasters befell their home countries. Charlie Hinton with the Haiti Action Committee of the Bay Area notes the judge found the Trump administration's decision arbitrary and suggested it was based on animus toward immigrant families of color.
It's another example of the appeal hermit trying to break up families, because many TPS holders have children and spouses that were born in this country. And so if they deport the TPS holders, children and spouses are going to have to make a decision about whether they go to a place many of them have never been or don't know.
A person's TPS status has to be renewed every 18 months, and the feds had declared that TPS extensions would not be granted in 98% of cases. The threat was most pressing for TPS holders from Sudan who could have been deported starting next month. The administration is vowing to fight the decision, pointing out that the TPS program was always meant to be temporary.
Vice President Mike Pence lashed out against China on Thursday, saying in a speech, "We will not be intimidated and we will not stand down." He accused China of trying to undermine the president and his agenda in the upcoming midterm elections. Pence said China has used covert actors, front groups, and propaganda in an attempt to sway U.S. public opinion. Farmers and conservation groups warn some of the nation's most critical resources are at stake as Congress puts off passing a new farm bill. The groups credit programs like the Conservation Reserve Program, or CREP, for helping to clean up places like Chesapeake Bay. Cattle farmer Scott Miller says CREP paid farmers like him rent for removing environmentally sensitive land from farm production. And the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, or EQIP, shared the cost of conservation practices on his land.
If you look, that the bay has gotten cleaner due to the CREP program, and it didn't really do much for us. And it wasn't until the EQIP that really changed everything for me.
While programs like crop insurance and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program will continue operating, the Farm Bill's conservation programs are stalled until negotiators can come to agreement for a vote expected in November or December. Now to Washington State, where the Southern Resident Orca Task Force recommendations for saving the population is open for public comment through Sunday.
The organization convened by Governor Jay Inslee released a long list of potential fixes last week and will review public comments at its October 17th meeting. A final plan is due November 16th. Rob Crable with Defenders of Wildlife and a member of the Prey Working Group of the task force says he's enthusiastic about recommendations to increase spill over Washington dams in order to help the orca's main food source, Chinook salmon, but he thinks the state can do more.
What we have in front of us for the task force right now is a good document. I think that it'll move us in the right direction, but I'm worried that the current report is not as bold as it needs to be.
Crable is concerned the task force's report is skirting issues such as dam removal that he says would be most helpful for salmon. The task force's other two groups are focused on vessel noise and toxins in the ecosystem. Crable says the recent deaths of an adolescent and newborn calf have underscored the need for quick action.
That was Eric Tigadoff reporting. Today is National Energy Efficiency Day, a day to take stock of the benefits for people's comfort, health, budget, and the environment for maximizing energy savings. More from Andrea Sears in New York.
On Earth Day last April, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced a new energy efficiency target to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and fight climate change. In fact, energy efficiency accounts for one-third of the state's goal for greenhouse gas emission reductions by 2030. Andy Frank, president of SEALD, a company that helps homeowners finance energy efficiency upgrades, believes it's a goal that can be met.
It requires a lot of leadership from the state. It requires the market to accelerate innovation, and it requires everybody working together, but I think it's absolutely possible.
He says for homeowners, one of the first steps is to schedule a virtual home energy audit, which can be done through many utility marketplaces. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
Meanwhile, new research is creating new controversy around the efficiency of wind power. The clean energy source is still better on emissions than coal or gas, a study from two Harvard researchers published Thursday has found. But if it replaced all of America's electricity sources, wind power would actually end up slightly warming the planet. The American Wind Energy Association challenged the findings, arguing researchers did not consider how conditions and placement of turbines affect warming or look at wind's effects outside the U.S. or beyond a year. I'm Mary Sherman. Thanks for newsing and cruising with us here at Public News Service. Member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Congressman Duncan Hunter's YouTube ad attacking his Democratic rival has received four Pinocchios from the Washington Post's Fact Checker column. That's the Fact Checker's worst rating, used only for Whoppers. In an article titled, "Congressman Falsely Ties Opponent to Terrorism," the Post's Salvador Rizzo examined a series of claims made by Hunter against Amar Campa Najjar. Rizzo concluded, "This ad uses naked anti-Muslim bias in an effort to scare Californians into voting for an indicted Republican incumbent." The reporter adds, The Democrat on the receiving end of these attacks isn't even Muslim. All the claims in the ad are false, misleading, or devoid of evidence. Hunter has not commented on the Washington Post's fact check of his recent ad. However, Camp and Najjar's campaign put out a press release and video statement by his Mexican-American mother, Abby Campa, denouncing, in Spanish, Hunter's ad as racist. The Post also gave Hunter three Pinocchios in an earlier fact check for suggesting that his indictment on federal corruption charges was a hit job by Democrats. The Post's reporter states, the U.S. attorney in San Diego, who was appointed by Attorney General Jeff Sessions, approved the indictment. Camp and Najjar's campaign, meanwhile, has issued a hard-hitting video ad of its own, showing Fox News reporters deriding Hunter for the corruption charges and for blaming his wife for the indictment. One female Fox newscaster asks, what kind of wimp throws his wife under the bus? The Hunters are accused of spending $250,000 in campaign funds on personal expenses, including lavish vacations, jewelry, children's school tuition, dental bills, and airfare for their son's pet rabbit. Hunter has long run for office on a platform of fiscal conservatism and personal responsibility. Now, he has been stripped of all committee assignments in Congress, pending the outcome of a trial on the felony charges, which is set to take place after the November election. For now, voters in his district lack representation on key committees in Washington. That could change if Camp and Najjar is elected, or if Hunter is exonerated. If convicted on the felony counts, Hunter would be removed from office under federal law, and voters would fund a special election to choose his replacement. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
A process server has filed a report with the El Cajon Police Department accusing Councilman Ben Colasio of threatening him with an attack dog. According to an email sent by Knox Services to attorney Jennifer Hasso, the threat occurred on September 26th while the process server was trying to serve legal documents on Jessica Colasio, the councilman's wife, at their home. The legal action related to a civil lawsuit in which the Colasios are accused of harassing and defaming multiple plaintiffs. The email states that Colasio told the process server that Jessica was not at home. Next, the process server claims Colasio, quote, proceeded to threaten me with his dog. He told me that he would let his dog take my shirt as he let the dog lunge at me while on a leash. This happened a couple more times. Then he stated he would let the dog take my shorts. I had to call the police and file a report, the process server stated, adding that Colasio was very hostile. Knox Services had advised attorney Hasso that the company will not go back to the property to serve the legal papers unless the process server is accompanied by an officer to keep the peace. East County Magazine has contacted the El Cajon Police to ask if an officer has been provided and whether action will be taken to investigate the claim, but the police department has not returned our call. This is not the first time that Colasio has been accused of threatening someone with his trained attack dog, Zoltan. Paul Cruz, a reporter for East County Magazine, previously filed a police report saying that Colasio threatened Cruz with the same dog in the parking lot outside of Office Depot at Parkway Plaza, where Cruz had taken a photo of Colasio's campaign vehicle. Cruz told police that Colasio advanced toward him with the dog snarling and lunging on its leash, while Colasio laughed and told Cruz, I'm going to take you down. A Reader article noted that Colasio admitted he recognized Cruz as a reporter who had previously written numerous articles about him. Though Cruz was unarmed, Colasio has claimed on social media that he and his wife felt threatened. The Society of Professional Journalists issued a statement defending Cruz and calling on the El Cajon Police Department to conduct a thorough investigation. Cruz and ECM editor Miriam Raftery recently won the Society of Professional Journalism's Gloria Penner Award for reporting on Colasio threats against other people, including beauty pageant contestants, a taco shop owner, and a local attorney. Colasio is seeking re-election to the council on the November ballot. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fisteer.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on that story. After it was recorded, Colasio posted on his social media denying threatening the process server, an incident which he claims never happened.
One of the most important initiatives on the statewide ballot is Proposition 1, a $4 billion bond measure to fund affordable housing construction, as well as rental and home loan subsidies. Specifically, the money would be used to build and renovate rentals, offer home loan help to veterans, construct additional housing in dense urban areas and near public transit, and to provide down payment assistance and other aid to low and moderate income homebuyers. It would also provide loans and grants for agricultural workers' housing. The Legislative Analyst's Office estimates that paying back the bond with interest would cost the state about $170 million a year for the next 35 years. That's about 0.1% of the state's general fund. Those in favor argue that the state faces an unprecedented housing crisis. California has the highest poverty rate in the nation when housing costs are factored in, and homelessness is a huge and growing problem, CalMatters reports. In San Diego, 57% of renters are cost-burdened, paying more than 30% of their income for rent, a study by Apartment List found. Proposition 1 would help over 55,000 people meet housing costs while also adding affordable housing that is currently in short supply. Those against argued that while the measure would provide a short-term increase in housing construction, it doesn't address the long-term affordable housing shortage and would increase the state's debt. The state faces an unprecedented housing crisis. All told, this will help more than 55,000 people meet their housing costs, while also adding some desperately needed affordable supply. Proposition 1 is supported by a broad coalition that includes the California Democratic Party and Gavin Newsom, the Democratic gubernatorial candidate, as well as by the California Federation of Labor, California Chamber of Commerce, League of Conservation Voters, and the American Legion. Prop 1 is opposed by the California Republican Party and John Cox, the Republican candidate for governor. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The Council on American-Islamic Relations, or CAIR, called on Cajon Valley Union School District members at the September 25th board meeting to fire former Greenfield Middle School's principal, Gregory Calvert, over his handling of the alleged bullying of a Syrian student. Calvert has since taken a position as assistant principal at Chase Avenue Elementary in the same school district. The bullying incident occurred on March 20th, when a schoolgirl was allegedly followed home by students and attacked for being Muslim. The student, referred to only by her first name, Sidra, is a refugee from Syria. Yusuf Miller, a member of CAIR San Diego, addressed the Cajon Valley School Board, calling for Calvert's firing during the meeting. Later he told East County Magazine that Sidra was attacked at school and followed all the way home. He stated she had her headdress pulled and was asked for ID. They asked her for her citizenship. Once the girl got home, they hit her parents as well, he added. Megan Afshan, also with CARE, asked the board for a comprehensive updated school bullying policy. He told East County Magazine that Calvert was, quote, cold and indifferent. His neglect and insensitivity toward parents, staff, and students has happened over many years. District Superintendent Dr. David Miyashiro said Calvert changed schools because he chose to take a different assignment so that he can spend more time with his children and studies as a doctoral student. He added that Calvert has been through anti-bullying programs and that the district has high expectations. But as for whether any students involved have been disciplined, the superintendent concluded, we can't discuss student or employee matters. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
You may be wondering why some San Diego County Sheriff's deputies are wearing pink patches on their uniforms. During October, deputies have the option to wear the pink patches to spark conversation with the public and bring attention to the fight against breast cancer during the Awareness Month. The Pink Patch Project started with the Seal Beach Police Department in Orange County in 2013 and is now a nationwide effort. This is the second year the Sheriff's Department is participating in this public awareness campaign. The public can purchase the commemorative patches as collectible items and the money raised will be donated to the Dr. Susan Love Foundation in Encino for cancer research. You can purchase a patch at the Deputy Sheriff's Association in Poway during business hours or call 858-486-9009. The Sheriff's Department also partners with La Maestra, a community health center, to provide free 3D mammograms to women inmates at Las Colinas Detention Center in Santee during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
Susan G. Komen San Diego, the largest nonprofit funder of breast cancer research outside of the U.S. government, will hold its sixth annual Dine Out for the Cure on Thursday, October 18th. The community fundraiser will take place at local restaurants, bakeries, and coffee houses across our region. Each restaurant will donate 10 to 25% of their sales to support free mammograms, financial assistance, breast cancer research, and public policy. Komen San Diego hopes to raise $35,000 this year. The organization's president, Shayna Gross, says dining out on this day can help save lives and support many San Diegans fighting breast cancer. There are dozens of participating restaurants countywide, including these locations in East County: Broken Yoke in El Cajon and the College area, Hooli's in La Mesa and Rancho San Diego, Pita Pit in Rolando, Sahara Taste of the Middle East in Rancho San Diego, and Terra American Bistro in Rolando. For a full list of participating restaurants, you can visit Komen San Diego, that's Komen with a K, KomenSanDiego.org/dineout. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
If you want to vote in the November 6th general election, the deadline to register is Monday, October 22nd. Besides new voters, people who moved recently or changed their name will also need to complete a new registration form. If you are not sure about your registration, you can check your status online at sdvote.com. If you are not registered or need to change your registration, you'll find that information there too. The San Diego County Registrar of Voters is sending courtesy postcards to two groups of county voters this week to reduce unnecessary provisional voting at the polls on November 6th. One postcard is going to approximately 20,000 mail ballot voters whom Postal Service records show have recently moved but have not re-registered. They will receive a postcard reminding them to complete a new registration form with their new home address. If they don't, they might not receive their mail ballot or voting information. They may also need to vote provisionally if they show up at their poll on Election Day. Registrar of Voters Michael Vu says it's important that these voters complete a new voter registration so they receive the correct ballot information before the election and so they receive their mail ballot, said Registrar of Voters Michael Vu. If they don't, by law, we have to send their mail ballot to the address we have on file. The other postcard is going to about 22,000 mail ballot voters who voted previously in the June election and aims to help avoid that happening again on November 6th. If you vote by mail, the registrar encourages you to vote and return that ballot promptly through the mail. However, if you decide to vote at your assigned polling place, you must bring your mail ballot with you and hand it to the poll workers at your polling place. If you don't, you will be asked to vote provisionally. Voters should also be aware that the mail-in ballot for this election has two cards, so you must turn in both cards, or you will need to vote provisionally. And if you mail in your ballot, be sure to put two stamps on the envelope. For more information, visit sdvote.com or call 858-565-5800. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
Acting on a tip from the public, El Cajon and San Diego Sheriff's deputies have arrested a woman charged with a felony hit-and-run crash that seriously injured a 9-year-old boy on a bicycle in El Cajon Thursday. East County Magazine's own photographer, Robert Gare, is a witness who says he saw the boy waiting for the light to turn green before walking across the intersection at Main Street and Sunshine with his bicycle in El Cajon on Thursday. He says a blue vehicle sped through a red light and struck the boy. Gare rushed to comfort the victim until paramedics arrived. The boy was unconscious and remains hospitalized with severe injuries, according to police. Officers located a blue Honda Fit identified as the suspect vehicle at an address in Lakeside. After a brief standoff, law enforcement entered the home and found 25-year-old Courtney Weaver hiding under a bed. Lieutenant Stephen Kirk with the El Cajon Police says the El Cajon Police Department would like to thank all members of the community who came forward with tips to help us locate this dangerous and wanted suspect. Gare, our photographer who aided the victim, calls the incident heartbreaking and urges motorists to please slow down, follow traffic laws, and watch for pedestrians and people on bicycles to prevent tragedies such as this one in the future. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Getz with a health alert. County health officials have declared an outbreak of meningitis at San Diego State University after a third case of meningococcal B disease was diagnosed this week. Two students have been hospitalized with a serious illness during the fall semester. Close contacts of these patients have been provided antibiotics to prevent illness. The third case was an undergraduate student who became ill over the summer while living off campus and not attending classes. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county public health officer, is recommending that all SDSU undergraduate students under age of 24 get vaccinated with one of two available meningococcal B vaccines if they have not already been vaccinated. SDSU graduate students, Open University students, staff, faculty, and visitors are not currently recommended to get the vaccination. Students with insurance should check with their health plans to determine where to go for vaccination, which is available at many pharmacies and clinics. Students should call ahead to be sure the vaccine is in stock. Arrangements are underway to have vaccine clinics on campus, with details to be announced later this week. The bacteria can be spread through close contact, such as sharing drinking glasses, eating utensils, cigarettes, pipes, or water bottles, as well as through kissing or living in close quarters. The time from exposure to onset of symptoms is 2 to 10 days. 10 cases of meningococcal disease have been reported in San Diego County this year, the highest number reported since 2013. Serogroup B accounts for 6 of the 10 cases reported locally this year. Serogroup B disease has caused 11 outbreaks at colleges and universities since 2008, including 2 campuses in California. Symptoms can include fever, intense headache, fatigue, stiff neck, and/or a rash. Anyone with potential exposure who develops any of these symptoms should immediately contact a healthcare provider or emergency room for an evaluation of possible meningococcal disease. Dr. Wooten warns, meningococcal disease can be serious and deadly, so we want anyone to be alert for symptoms and seek care should they occur.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a health report. Consumers looking for a place to safely dispose of unwanted or expired prescription drugs can now find pharmacies offering drug take-back services. The California Board of Pharmacy has created an online resource of pharmacies statewide that have signed up under the state regulations to accept unused drugs from customers. Besides promoting convenience and protection for the environment, the regulations are intended to help stop prescription drug abuse by increasing options for the public to safely get rid of medications. The Drug Take Back search tool is available at the California State Board of Pharmacy website at www.pharmacy.ca.gov. A link to Drug Take Back search and information is posted on the right side of the homepage under Popular Pages. Users can enter a pharmacy name, city, or zip code to easily find a nearby location for disposing of unused medications. The search page also has links to help consumers find additional drug take-back locations through other state and federal programs. Pharmacies operating take-back programs registered with the Board of Pharmacy may offer 2 types of services, on-site collection bins and/or envelopes for mailing back medications.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes the Ramona Air Fair, a fishing class at Lake Morena, Oktoberfest in El Cajon, Oma's Pumpkin Patch in Lakeside, the Pumpkin Express in Campo, and a haunted amusement park in Flynn Springs.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including spooky campouts at Lake Jennings in Lakeside, and at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine, the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, the Borrego Days Desert Festival and Parade, Fair Trade Shopping in La Mesa, and Haunt Fest on Main in El Cajon.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The Ramona Airfare and Fly-In will take place at the county's Ramona Airport this Saturday, October 6th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Visitors can see vintage airplanes, CAL FIRE and U.S. Forest Service firefighting aircraft, and homemade planes. Rides in a tethered hot air balloon, as well as Young Eagle airplane rides, will also be available on a first-come, first-served basis. You can see classic cars, enjoy live music, tour the control tower and a helicopter museum, enjoy kids' activities such as face painting and piñatas, savor foods, and a beer garden for adults. For details, visit the Ramona Airport website.
You're invited to drop a line at a free fishing class at Lake Morena County Park in Campo this Saturday, October 6th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Meet at the boat dock to get tips on how to catch fish such as trout, bass, bluegill, or catfish. You'll also learn about lures, baits, how to rig tackle, tie knots, and cast. For more information, call the Lake Morena County Park at 619-579-4101.
The German-American Societies of San Diego continue their Oktoberfest at their headquarters in El Cajon this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, October 5th through 7th. Guests can enjoy authentic German food, such as bratwurst, ox roasted on a spit, potato salad, potato pancakes, sauerkraut, red cabbage, pretzels, and Bavarian pastries, and, of course, German beer. Entertainment includes the Guggenbach Bomb Band, flown in all the way from Germany for your polka and oompa-pa pleasure. For advanced tickets and details, visit GermanClubSanDiego.org.
Now, in its 19th year, Oma's Pumpkin Patch at the Van Omering Dairy in Lakeside is open for the season, now through October 31st. You can visit Tuesdays through Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Activities include Cottonseed Mountain for kids to climb and slide down, a playground with swings, covered hay rides around the farm, a hay bale maze, a petting corral, a pedal cart, and tricycle racetrack, kid-powered games, and a pumpkin patch with pumpkins ranging from small sizes to over 100 pounds. Also available for purchase are Indian corn, corn stalks, gourds, hay bales, honey, crafts, souvenirs, and seasonal items. There's also a Cow Country Cafe snack barn. For admission details and directions, visit omaspumpkinpatch.com.
You're invited to come ride the rails on the Pumpkin Express aboard vintage rail cars through the San Diego County Mountains as fall descends upon Campo. Walk through a themed display building at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum, complete with two haunted trains, a pumpkin patch, and a creepy cast of ghosts and ghouls. For details, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum at psrm.org.
The Haunted Amusement Park, a Halloween scare trail, and haunted house is open now through October 28th on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. The trail leads guests through the abandoned grounds of Marshall Scotty's Playland in Flynn Springs, just east of El Cajon. The Ferris wheel, roller coaster, and bumper cars are now the backdrop to this annual Halloween haunt. The hours are 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Fridays and Saturdays, and 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Sundays. For more information or tickets, you can visit scaretrail.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
You're invited to step back in time to an 1800s-era Rocky Mountain fur trading camp at the 30th annual Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, October 12th through the 21st at Mataguay Scout Reservation in Santa Isabel. You can view demonstrations of survival skills such as tool making, cooking, tomahawk throwing, archery, and black powder shooting. This event draws hundreds of participants from across the western United States. Period campers and day visitors are welcome. For more information, visit LagunaMountainRendezvous.com.
Lake Jennings in Lakeside is hosting spooky Campoween events the 2 weekends before Halloween, October 19th through 21st and October 26th through 28th, complete with ghost stories, s'mores, a campsite decorating contest, trick-or-treating, and creepy crafts. For more information, visit lakejennings.org.
You're invited to shop with joy and purpose at the annual La Mesa Fair Trade Shopping Event on Sunday, October 14th from 8 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at St. Martin of Tours Parish Hall in La Mesa. Enjoy fair trade ice cream and food samples while perusing handmade baskets, jewelry, leather goods, clothing, toys, pottery, Christmas ornaments, gift baskets, coffee, tea, chocolate, and more. You can make a difference with your purchase this season by improving people's lives and the environment. The goal of the fair trade movement is to pay farmers and artisans in developing countries a fair price for their goods to help alleviate poverty around the world.
The 7th annual Haunt Fest on Main is back on Friday, October 19th from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. on East Main Street in downtown El Cajon. This fun, family-friendly Halloween-themed community event features live music, costume contests, carnival rides and games, candy challenge activities, Monsters, Inc. and Monsters University outdoor movies, face painting, craft booths, inflatables, and more. Admission is free, but some of the rides will charge a nominal fee. For more information, visit hauntfest.org.
An air parade will sweep the skies with over 30 vintage and military aircraft as part of this year's parade in Borrego Springs on Saturday, October 20th at 10 a.m., followed by a 10:30 a.m. street parade complete with floats, equestrians, trick-riding cowboys, marching bands, and more. It's all part of the two-day, 53rd annual Borrego Days Festival, October 20th and 21st. Borrego Days also includes crafts and vendors, kids' activities including rock climbing, carnival rides, and inflatable slides, food and beverages, plus live music to dance the night away. For more information, you can visit borregodays.com.
You can come for a wild and ghoulish night under the stars with the rescued exotic animals of lions, tigers, and bears in Alpine on Friday night, October 26th through Saturday morning, October 27th. The annual spooky campover at this world-renowned nonprofit animal sanctuary is a family favorite. Enjoy pumpkin carving, s'mores, campfire songs, a costume contest, and watching big cats and bears enjoy their pumpkin treats. For tickets and details, visit lionstigersandbears.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
This is Helen O'Field from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting The Sounds of History on East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. This past week, our region dodged a bullet when Hurricane Rosa weakened to a tropical storm and struck primarily east of San Diego County. but it's worth a reminder that our region is not immune from hurricane damage. Back in 1976, Hurricane Kathleen struck our region, the most powerful tropical cyclone ever to hit San Diego and Imperial counties. With winds up to 90 miles an hour, Hurricane Kathleen dropped a foot of water on Mount Laguna and sent a wall of water 10 feet high and 40 feet wide rushing through the town of Ocotillo in neighboring Imperial Valley, destroying over 70% of the town. Another wave a mile high and 2.5 feet wide swept through Jacumba, demolishing a farmhouse there. The San Diego Union-Tribune said of the Ocotillo nightmare, there was no warning, just a sudden roar. The powerful storm killed 13 people in California and Mexico. It also washed out Interstate 8, crumbling the freeway and destroying a bridge at Meyer Creek, where a 600-foot-wide section of the freeway was wiped out, leaving a gully in its place about 40 feet deep. Eldo Sanders jumped in his truck to try and save people stranded in Painted Gorge out in Imperial Valley after hearing a call for help on his Citizens Band radio. He never made it. His truck was found overturned in mud, and his body was later found buried in a mud bank. Another resident of Ocotillo, John Patrick Riley, refused to evacuate his home. Rescuers from the Ocotillo Volunteer Fire Department found the 63-year-old man's body inside his home, which had flooded. An El Centro resident, William Mina, is believed to have died when his vehicle was swept off the Meyer Creek Bridge on Interstate 8 by a towering wall of water. Flooding and mudslides destroyed three bridges on the San Diego-Arizona Eastern Railway, ultimately leading to abandonment of that railway line. It smashed airplanes at desert airports and turned one plane on its nose in Yuma. A Salton Sea Resort area, Bombay Beach, was completely underwater. Authorities began referring to it as a lake. Most of the 14 cities in Imperial County were utterly inundated. Sheriff's deputies and the Navy airlifted residents out of areas west of El Centro, including an elderly woman trapped when water overflowed her bed. She was saved by sheriff deputies in a flatboat. In San Diego, the storm shut down a Padres game. Out in Imperial Valley, farmers suffered when at least 10,000 acres of sugar beets were wiped out along with many other crops. All routes out of Imperial County except for State Route 111 were shut down all at one time. 80 families were left homeless in Mexicali, and roofs blew off homes 600 miles south of San Diego. Hundreds of homes were destroyed across the region by the powerful storm, which caused $160 million in damage, ranking as one of the worst storms in California history. Alan Zangheim grew up on a ranch in Imperial Valley, and he recalls the flash flood that raced across the desert floor on September 9, 1976. The next morning, he remembers going outside with his dad, believing that the storm had passed. And then, he writes on his website, "We kept noticing some sunlight reflecting off the San Diego Mountains out towards the west. It was like a sparkle. My dad thought it was peculiar, and he said it looks like water. And we listened to the radio shortly thereafter and heard the flash flood warnings. My mom was scared and pretty insistent that we vacate the ranch, and we did. We returned to find out the next morning that a wall of water approximately 10 feet high swept across the Imperial Valley desert floor, wiping out the town of Ocotillo and killing some motorists who were unfortunate enough to be on Interstate 8 at the time the water came through. When we returned to our ranch, it was under 3 feet of water, and my dad's crops were ruined. It was due to this catastrophic incident that we sold our ranch and moved to the San Diego area," Zangheim recalls. He warns that due to the unique geography of Ocotillo, which sits on an alluvial fan below sea level, the same unfortunate events could very well happen again. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Next up from County News Service, we're going to be hearing from Larry Johnson out at the old Campo Stone Store, one of East County's most unique and colorful historical landmarks.
If you're ever on Highway 94, about an hour east of San Diego, you might see this unique building.
Welcome to Historic Campo and the Gaskell Brothers Stone Store Museum.
The Gaskell Brothers built the fortress-like stone store in 1885. Previously, it was a wooden structure, the site of a famous shootout.
A group of bandits had been raiding down the coast of California, so gunfire started, and there was a big shootout. The guy that they had shot on the floor, one of the Gaskell Brothers, didn't kill him. He jumped up, grabbed a shotgun, went out and shot people. And so they were shooting dead blank range around. And both Gaskell brothers were wounded. The locals were afraid of another raid. They couldn't get the military up here to guard and protect them. So they thought they needed a substantial building. So that's why they decided to build a building as thick as this and as strong as this. If you take a look around, if you come in, you'll see that the walls down here are about 4 foot thick. It's from stone that was quarried here on site by hand with hammer and drill and no backhoes or heavy lifting objects. It was manpower. It served as a store from 1885 until about 1927.
No longer a store, this building is now a museum, thanks to County Parks and the Mountain Empire Historical Society. Today, the store reflects the early life of the town of Campo.
When the Historical Society began, they tried to make it look a lot like it did in 1899, or when it was a store functioning to serve the local public. So they have gathered some of the food stuff, the tobaccos, the medical supplies, the ropes, the cans, anything that the ranchers needed. If they didn't have it, you didn't need it.
The building is filled with photos, books, artifacts from the Kumeyaay Indians who occupied the region prior to the settlers, and other rare items.
These shackles were found locally about 3 miles from here on a ranch in about 1885. A person who's bought the ranch found in the well the skeleton. On the skeleton, on the legs, were these shackles. They didn't know who the body was or who the skeleton was. It's still a mystery today. One of the interesting things about these shackles is they're blacksmith made. There's no lock to them. Once they were on, they were meant to stay.
Upstairs is an impressive exhibit dedicated to Campo's military history, including Camp Lockett.
Camp Lockett was started before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. I guess the military was anticipating that there was going to be a war, and they needed another base here, and they needed a base in this area because of the railroad, which was a key supply line. We had a long exposed border, and one of the things they were afraid of was that if the Japanese came into the war, they might invade Mexico and come into San Diego. So this was sort of a critical point, and so they started building Camp Lockett.
The 10th Cavalry is one you may have heard of.
The famed Buffalo Soldiers, white officers and an African-American enlisted troops. And they were stationed here, and they were guarding tunnels and railroad and the border. Very tough, very good soldiers.
The museum is open on weekends, making for a nice day trip to learn about our local pioneers.
They were entrepreneurs, every one of them. They were constantly trying to figure out how to make the best of what they had and where they were, and to make a living and to leave history and substantial items behind them so that descendants would have something to live and work on and hopefully try and take care of.
And next up, as we approach Halloween this month, we thought it would be a good time to replay our interview with the award-winning horror novelist, Mark Clement.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today we're interviewing local author, editor, and teacher Mark A. Clements. My guest has had 4 novels published and has edited dozens of others. His book, The Land of Nod, won Best Horror or Mystery and the first Theodore Geisel Award at the San Diego Book Awards. Mark also teaches at San Diego Writers, Inc., the Southern California Writers Conference, and the La Jolla Writers Conference. He is especially known for his late-night read and critique workshops and his pep talks on perseverance and passion. Welcome, Mark. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Your first book, 602, A Ghost Story, was written on a typewriter and traditionally published in 1989. And now all your books are available as ebooks. How have these changes in the publishing industry affected you as a novelist and teacher?
The truth is they don't affect me at all. An awful lot of people who are beginning writers or even fairly experienced writers who have not been published start to put things backwards. They start to be concerned about, do I go with a conventional publisher? Do I publish this as an ebook? Before they've actually finished the job. To me, the writing of the book itself comes first. You write the book for yourself and for the people around you to make it as perfect as you can. Then you worry about how and where to publish it.
You also teach a class called Poetry for Novelists. With so many industry challenges, how do you keep those literary fires burning?
First of all, I read poetry, which is a fairly recent interest of mine. Also lots of nonfiction and essays, articles, as well as novels and short stories. The idea being to learn everything that you can, which is a never-ending process. Try to find the things that appeal to you and pull from them the things that will inspire your own writing and help you in your own writing. And then worry later about what you're going to do with that work when it's done.
Your books have been categorized as horror, yet you also focus a great deal on character development. Do you still define your work as part of the horror genre? And if so, what does that mean to you?
The genre thing is kind of a pain. Stephen King actually referred to the horror genre as a ghetto at the time when it... Now a lot of bookstores no longer have that genre separated out in a ghetto. They kind of come and go depending on the tastes of the public, of the reading public. But I don't... That's something else I don't concern myself with personally. I write what I want to write. My books were all marketed as horror and had covers that indicated that, but they crossed genres and they had a wide variety of things. One of them was sort of a detective story in a fashion. 602, as you said, was a ghost story. Another would qualify more as a thriller. It always varies, and those are marketing decisions that publishers used to make. Of course, now a lot of authors have to make that kind of choice themselves if they go the self-publishing route. But my good example of how this can be damaging is Michael Crichton. His first book that he published under his own name was called The Andromeda Strain. And by any categorization, it was hard science fiction. But they didn't publish it that way. They didn't market it that way. When it was on the shelves, it was just put in fiction. And we all know what happened with Michael Crichton's career. If he'd been stuck in the science fiction ghetto, the odds of that happening would have been greatly reduced. He would have been considered a science fiction writer. And all of those people out there who say, well, I don't read science fiction, just as there are people who say, I don't read horror, I don't read romance, whatever, would never have picked it up. And history would not have been what it has become in the book world as a result.
Right. And we all love Crichton. What is your next book about? And do you know when it will be available?
It's hard to say when it'll be available. I've been working on it forever. It is a kind of a rumination on evolution in all of its aspects. Evolution of individual people, their personalities, their behaviors. Evolution of life on Earth and ways that it might have been different under different circumstances. What if the circumstances were to change and the whole process of evolution of life on Earth were to change? How would the life that's already here deal with it? So again, horror, science fiction, mainstream fiction, what is it? I don't know. All I know is that I'm trying to make it the finest book that I possibly can.
Well, we look forward to reading it. Mark, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us. For more information on Mark A. Clements and his work, please visit his website at www.markaclements.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy.
This is Jonathan Goetz with East County Magazine's Jobs Talk. One of the oldest and largest community college job fairs in the county will continue its successful run. The 40th Annual Career Expo at Grossmont College will be held on Wednesday, October 10th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the college's main quad. Over 100 employers and exhibitors are expected to participate in the Career Expo, which is free and open to the public. Several college programs will also be represented to make the event both a job fair and an opportunity to explore careers. Some employers will interview on the spot, so applicants are encouraged to dress professionally and to bring copies of their resumes. Sequan Casino recently announced that it is hiring for more than 700 new positions for its hotel and resort expansion, with a variety of jobs in the food and beverage, hotel, and casino divisions. The Grossmont College Career Expo is one of the job fairs where Sequan's hiring managers will interview and hire on-site. Viejas Casino and Resort will also be at the expo. Public school districts and private educational institutions will be represented. The San Diego Job Corps Center, which provides academic and career skills training for young adults, is also looking for teachers, counselors, and admissions staff. Nonprofit organizations like the Arc of San Diego, Easter Seals, and Home of Guiding Hands that provide programs and services for people with disabilities will also be at the expo. Law enforcement is also represented, with the San Diego County Sheriff's Department and police departments for several local cities, including San Diego and El Cajon, as well as private security companies and U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Financial management services, preschools, and healthcare providers have signed up, as well as the military, including U.S. Army and the California Air National Guard. To help job seekers make the most of the Career Expo, the Career Center at Grossmont College will offer workshops the week of October 8th. Call 619-644-7615 for details. Tips are also available online at the Grossmont College website, grossmont.edu. Renee Nessori, the college's Career Center coordinator, says, "We want students to be better prepared and confident while navigating the expo." She advises job seekers to work on their elevator pitch, adding, "When there are many candidates interested in the same position, it's important to make a quick and lasting impression."
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Goetz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.